Two Designers Walk Into a Bar is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network.
For more information about our show or to discover more podcasts you'll enjoy, visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Perfect, thank you.
That was, it just gets better every time.
It does.
All right.
It's like fine wine and cheese.
Okay.
That's what we should have named. We should have named our podcast Wine and Cheese.
Wine and cheese, and
the listeners can figure out which one of us is wine and which one of us is cheese. That's
I think it varies and alternates, doesn't it? Sometimes you're cheese, sometimes I'm cheese.
That's right.
We both wine.
Hey everyone, it's Elliot.
And Todd. Welcome to Two Designers Walk Into a Bar, an ongoing conversation about pop culture and iconic design.
Today we're going to take a step back in time and into a bar from the past as we rub elbows with the Beats.
We may be in Greenwich Village. We could be in North Beach. Wherever our bar is for you, it's home to the hippest cats and the coolest kittens.
So ask the bartender for some reasonably priced Chianti, wave the cigarette smoke away from your face,
and dig the crazy scene right alongside us here in the bar.
So we've talked a little bit about layout. We've talked a little bit about the design side of the house in terms of photography and typography, things like that. But I also want to talk a little bit about illustration because, of course, there's a look and feel to the illustration that came on the scene in pop culture around this time. And as we've talked about before, literature played a part in the pop culture scene. Music played a part in the pop culture scene. There were paintings, as we talked about, things like abstract expressionism. So there was this real melting pot of all these different influences that were going on. And I wanted to talk a little bit about illustration because I feel that mid-century illustration just has this certain look about it. And it's definitely of its time, but I think it transcends its time as well because it definitely influences some things that are still going on today with some illustrators that to you and I as designers may be household names to us, but even for the general public, even though these people aren't household names, you know their work. You've seen their work.
Yeah, you can pinpoint it.
The look and feel, the style.
Yeah.
And we'll, of course, have some examples of this on our episode page as well. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to get started with this episode today, not talking about an illustrator. So, you know, we were zigging, and I'm going to zag for a minute. But I promise I'll pull it together, Todd. I know we haven't done that to date, but hope springs eternal. I plan to do it with this episode, so I'm going to turn
over a new leaf.
Zag on,
my friend.
All right.
Zag on.
So I want to talk about jazz pianist Mary Lou Williams for a moment.
I'm eager to know who this person is.
You're confused. I warned you. I told you I was going to zag, and here I am. I'm zagging, so hang on for dear life. Okay. I want to begin a bit before the Beats in 1910, And that was the year that Mary Lou Williams was born. And I want to read a quick excerpt from a magazine called Copper Magazine. And that is from, there's a company called PS Audio, and they make audio gear. You might be able to guess that from their name. But they also put out a magazine, and it talks about different musicians and industry trends and things like this. So I found an article in this magazine about Mary Lou Williams and a little bit about her history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read this. I'll read this straight. I'll read this.
You're going to read this article to us.
I'm going to read a couple paragraphs real quick as we jump into it. Okay. Considering that she wrote arrangements for Duke Ellington and mentored Thelonious Monk, you know, these are names you and I have both heard of, general public has heard of too.
Yeah.
Jazz pianist and composer Mary Lou Williams should be much more famous than she is. Like, so this is, again, why have we not heard of her?
All right.
She was also an outstanding player with a warm and almost liquid sound. And that's a great phrase. Yeah. This is a musician well worth getting to know.
Okay. All right.
So I mentioned 1910. So Williams was born Mary Scruggs in 1910, one of 11 siblings in an Atlanta family that moved to Pittsburgh when she was a child.
Didn't have TV.
That's true. By playing the piano at parties around her neighborhood, she brought badly needed money into the household. She landed a coveted spot touring on the Orpheum vaudeville circuit at the age of 12, and soon Ellington invited her to sit in on some of his gigs. So obviously she was pretty good.
Yeah.
If at age 12, Duke Ellington's inviting her on stage.
Yeah.
After she married saxophonist John Bearcat Williams, she took over.
I wish I had a name that was an animal, too.
What animal would you... What's your spirit animal?
I don't know. I think it would... I don't... Let me think about that.
Okay, I'm going to read the rest of this while you're thinking. How about that?
All right, good.
Okay. Right. After she married saxophonist John Bearcat Williams, she took over leadership of her husband's band in Memphis so he could accept work out of town.
Mm-hmm.
They both ended up moving to Kansas City, Missouri. Remember where we took our trip?
That's right. That's
Kansas
right.
City, Home Missouri.
That's right.
To play with the Clouds of Joy, a group directed by Andy Kirk. Okay, one last paragraph as we wrap this up.
All right.
When her marriage split up, so, you know, it's hard to be married to Bearcat, apparently.
Yeah, evidently, yeah.
Yeah. So when her marriage split up, she worked with Art Blakey, who we talked about before, in a band in Pittsburgh for a while before moving to New York. Much in demand, she faced mental health problems that prompted her to take a hiatus to devote herself to her faith and to charities, particularly helping substance-addicted musicians get back to work. Again, we've talked about this too, right?
I imagine there was a lot of opportunity for that
I would think
in the jazz world.
No shortage of work there. Her religious explorations led to the composition of several masses, one of which was choreographed by Alvin Ailey. So, no slouch. Yeah. A beloved music teacher at all levels, she continued to offer advice to fellow professionals and basic instruction to school children until her death in 1981.
Dang. Okay, so there's two things that strike me about what you just read. One is, we should know her. She should be far more famous with all the influence that she had. Mm-hmm. And the second is, gosh, what a long career she had.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, if she was invited on stage at 12 by Duke Ellington.
Yeah.
So that would have been, you know, for those of you like Todd and I who are bad at math, she was born in 1910 and she was playing with Duke Ellington at age 12. That would be 1922.
Mm-hmm.
And then she died in 1981. So 59 years later.
That's amazing.
That's incredible. Her career spanned a very transitional time in terms of formats for records. We talked about this before. She started releasing music on 78s, and that's when an album was truly an album, as we talked about before, then went to 45s and then went to 33 and a third LPs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you think about that 60-year arc and all of the transition that was happening. I mean, if you think about it, obviously you can buy her music on CD today and probably digital download and everything. But I mean, even in 81, that had also gone through 8 tracks, that had gone through cassettes, that had gone through the birth of the CD. I mean, so like 6 different musical mediums. I mean, that's insane.
Okay, pause.
Yes.
Pause.
Yes.
I appreciate learning about Mary Lou Williams. I thought we were talking about illustrators today.
Okay. You're right.
Okay.
So I want to bring up another name.
Okay, okay.
And this is someone who we're going to be talking about today. Have you ever heard of a gentleman named David Stone Martin?
No. Should I? Is he related to Mary Lou Williams?
Not directly, no.
Okay, okay.
They were friends. Okay. So when she was recording her first album, and that was, she was heading up what was known as the Mary Lou Williams Trio, and this was her first album, so it was also named the Mary Lou Williams Trio. And this came out in 1945 on Ash, and that's A-S-C-H, Ash Records. She knew David Stone Martin, and she said, "Will you provide the artwork for my album?"
Okay.
He obliged. He did that for her. And this album is not really great in either design or illustration, in my opinion.
Okay.
We'll have an image of it on our episode page.
All right.
However, why is this a pivotal moment? Why am I?
Why are we talking about this? If it's
so far it's dead end after dead end, right? And it's because this experience and this exposure to jazz, this kicked off a lifelong career for David Stone Martin in terms of his interest in jazz, and it flipped the switch, and he ended up doing hundreds of album designs for jazz labels.
Okay. Okay.
But it all began because of this friendship. So let's jump in and let's talk about that a little bit more.
All right.
You know, I want to take a step back for a moment, and I want to talk a little bit about illustration style during this period in general. Because, Todd, I know I regard you as a designistrator. You do as much illustration as you do design. And we've talked to several of our friends in our Bar Snacks episodes who are also illustrators as much as they're designers. And I think there's just this visual sensibility that's brought to the table when you have these folks who are these hybrid talents, if you will. I think there's just a more broad sensibility. And so we're definitely going to, with this episode and our following episode, we're going to definitely celebrate some of those folks. And we've talked a little bit about this scene and this era in some of our past episodes, you know, at the top of this series about the Beats, the Atomic Age, the Space Race, and the transition into popular culture for those things, technology is taking hold. You start to think about this sort of, what was technology or what was funkiness coming out of this sort of abstract expressionism? What does that start to look like? You know, you think of things like Googie architecture.
Right, right.
You mentioned in past episodes with some of these jazz albums how the type was bouncing and doing these fun things. And when you think about hotel signs or restaurant signs from this era, they definitely, the fun ones, start to have that sensibility to them. And I think that carries over not only into the design work of these jazz albums, but also the sensibilities of the illustrations that appeared on these albums and were influenced by these albums. Because, of course, these folks didn't only illustrate jazz albums. They had a bunch of different things they were working on over the years. You know, you think about, I would say, even our first love, Mad Magazine. Think about some of the illustration styles in Mad as that started to come of age in the 50s and 60s and things like that. So sort of in the scene or in the milieu of all of that, I want to start to talk about David Stone Martin a little bit, because he is definitely in this vein. And I think the style that he has is still very, very influential today. So who was this guy, aside from, of course, being friends with jazz musicians?
That's right, right.
He was born in Chicago in 1913 and went to the Art Institute of Chicago, graduated in the mid-30s, and came to New York in the early 40s. And he was already interested in jazz. As we mentioned, he was friends with pianist Mary Lou Williams. And I'll go ahead and say it. Todd, I know you love a scene.
I do love a scene.
I know you love a scandal.
Hey, I love a scandal.
You do. So I'm going to spill a little tea. And the word on the street, my sources have informed me that some might say that David Stone Martin and Mary Lou Williams were very close friends, if you get my drift.
Oh, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Slightly problematic, however, for a couple reasons. Uh-huh. One was they were married.
She was married.
Yeah, they were both married to other people. And okay. And also he was white and she was African American. So I think there were a couple reasons why, you know, you might say that they had to keep it under wraps a little bit. So, you know, she introduced him to jazz, gave him this opportunity. She, I guess, was sort of his muse. And so here we are.
Mm.
As I mentioned earlier, when she recorded her first album, and this was for Ash Records, Moses Ash was the gentleman. She asked if her friend could design the album. He agreed. And so here we are. Okay. So this kicks off this relationship between David Stone Martin and jazz. Now, by 1950, so I mentioned he came to New York in the early 40s. By 1950, he had already produced more than 100 covers, 100
wow.
album covers for labels including Mercury, Ash, Disc, and Dial. So where did these things come from?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, because obviously he hit a vein pretty quickly. Did he develop contacts within the record companies or the record industry that just kept feeding him these things?
Right, yeah, because it's not like Ash Records is this household name for a majority.
Right,
of people. Mercury certainly is, but not right. Ash, right? So, yes, he, as it turns out, had a friendship with a record producer named Norman Granz, G-R-A-N-Z.
Uh-huh.
So this is one of the ways he was getting fed work. In addition to the labels I just mentioned, he also created illustrations for more than 400 albums. 400.
Wow.
For a variety of labels, including Decca, Verve, Capitol, Clef, Norgan, RCA, and Smithsonian Folkways. So those are several labels I would regard as household names that are still around today that we've certainly heard of.
When I look at his work, it looks like if I were doing an illustration of the time, like what artist would be drawing at that period. It's these great black lines and kind of expressive lines and block chunks of color. I mean, it is very mid-century looking.
Yeah, so very ink blot. It was obviously done with pen and ink or ink and brush. It was meant to be sort of sketchy, sloppy, frenetic, fun. It wasn't meant to be super tight. It was meant to be very expressive.
Lots of portraits, too. Like, he did really great portraits, didn't he?
Did, yeah. It was amazing. So he did Stan Getz, Count Basie, Charlie Parker, Billie Holiday, Art Tatum, John Coltrane, Ella Fitzgerald, Dizzy Gillespie, Jelly Roll Morton, Duke Ellington. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some household names for sure.
Wow.
So he did nearly all of the covers for Ash, Clef, and Jazz at the Philharmonic, right? So New York, labels of the 40s and the 50s. So he had a pretty steady pipeline of assignments coming in, obviously mm-hmm. with some very distinctive and very talented industry figures in the world of jazz. It's really incredible to think about.
Yeah, Elliot, I'm glad you brought this guy to the bar. This is the guy, if you're teaching what mid-century illustration looks like, especially relating to jazz, David Stone Martin, and that's the guy right there.
Okay. Hey, you know what? I think it's time for two things. I think it's time for a break. That's the first thing. I think it's about time that, I don't know, maybe out of the goodness of your heart or at least your wallet, you went ahead and refreshed my drink for our next...
I knew that was coming.
Oh, come on.
I knew that. All right. Well, we'll be back in just a minute, everybody.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, we want to take a moment to mention that if you're enjoying this episode, we have an archive of topics ranging from the Olympics to movie posters.
Think Ghostbusters.
Iconic images.
Think Bigfoot.
Punk music.
The Ramones.
Saturday morning cartoons.
The Pink Panther.
And failed products like OK Soda. Visit our website at twodesignerswalkintoabar.com for full episode notes and visuals, the latest blog content, and to sign up for our newsletter.
Follow us on social media. We can be found on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Find the links on our website or search using the phrase Two Designers Walk Into a Bar.
Most importantly, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people like you find podcasts like this.
And tell a friend about us. Send them a link to our podcast from your listening platform of choice.
And if you're inclined, buy our merchandise. Stickers, coasters, magnets, t-shirts. We're designers. We make good stuff, and it helps support the show.
Get in touch. Use the contact form on our website or send an email to hello@twodesignerswalkintoabar.com.
We read every message we get. Honest.
And we're available for speaking gigs. Email us to learn more.
Okay, now, back to the bar. Kind of a silly question. Did he only do album covers, or did he do other... did he only work in jazz, or did he do other stuff, too?
No, he did a bunch of other things. So, you've probably heard of a fellow from the 50s named William Golden, who...
Worked for a broadcasting company, CBS, I believe.
Yes. So the famous I, obviously he oversaw that, pun intended, I guess. But Martin didn't design that. But he did do many print ads for CBS during the 1950s. And we'll go ahead and find some of these and put them on the episode page. But he also expanded into illustration for magazines. As we talked about earlier, he didn't only do jazz albums. The folks we're going to be talking about did other things as well. So he did assignment work for Time, 17, the Saturday Evening Post, and other glossies from the 50s and the 60s that were sitting on everyone's coffee tables in their living rooms.
This is wild because he literally was everywhere in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And the name was not well known to me, but he literally was everywhere during that time. And I think that's amazing. The work is really super great. And encourage our listeners to check out the episode page to see all these examples. He certainly is a prolific guy.
Yes, 100%, 100%. Just a couple quick things, and we'll get into my favorite jazz album that he did. In my opinion, it's the one I like the best. So I want to just go back and talk about his style a little bit more and touch on some of the things that I had mentioned a minute ago. So where did he get this? We've talked about this style, but like, where did it come from? How did he happen upon it? And like, how did he kind of hit his stride as an artist? So he really, really loved a New York-based social realist artist named Ben Shahn. And so they worked together. Yeah. You're probably familiar with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they worked together on Works Progress Administration, WPA era projects in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And many of his album illustrations were, you know, like we talked about with the Blue Note artwork, line art combined with a single color and very often a pastel shade. You talked about with Blue Note how it was often bright colors, these sort of primary printing colors, a magenta or yellow. These were more subtle. They were more mellow. And so the tool that he was using, we talked about this ink blot, this sort of fun energy. The tool he normally used was a crow quill pen. So I had never heard of a crow quill. So I imagine like Heckle and Jekyll, even though they were magpies, I think, weren't they? I can't remember. Mockingbirds, I can't remember. But I imagine like one of their tail feathers getting plucked out and, you know, him dipping it in an inkwell and going to town on a piece of illustration board.
I think by that time they were making them out of metal, so they didn't have to pluck Heckle and Jekyll.
Oh, man. But those guys deserve it.
Not that you should. You should pluck Heckle and Jekyll.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense because the technique that a crow quill gives you, it can give you fine lines, it can give you blotty fat lines with pressure, so you can actually, so it just looks more expressive, and it is prone to splotches and leaking, so just that even adds more to the
it gives a character. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, but anyway, you were talking about your favorite album of that.
Remember, I mentioned a moment ago that one of his clients was Jazz at the Philharmonic, right? But he also worked for Jazz at Lincoln Center, another fly-by-night outfit you may have heard of.
They might be something one day.
Yeah. So this was in the 60s and the 70s. And there ended up being an exhibition of his artwork there. And it was said in this exhibition that his work, quote, brilliantly evocative jazz covers for the Verve label and others at mid-century set the industry standard.
Yeah.
Martin sought visual equivalents of the music contained in the sleeves he illustrated. Iconic images instantly recognizable as modern jazz. So I think that we are on to something in terms of this line work and energy and what he was trying to zero in on with his work. And so where can someone find it now aside from the internet and aside from the album, which everybody is going to hop onto the internet and search for in just a moment when I reveal what it is?
That's right.
You can find his work at MoMA in New York and the Met in New York and at the Art Institute of Chicago. We mentioned this where he went to school. And the Smithsonian. So he's no slouch.
No, that's right. And I'm looking at some now too, Elliot, and there's actually books of his artwork that if you are not going to the MoMA or the Smithsonian, you can actually get a book and take a look at it.
You can. But before we do that, before everybody stops listening to the podcast and hops on Amazon, just one more reason for them to stop listening to the podcast.
Hey, don't give any ideas.
Oh, sorry. Let's jump in and let's talk about my favorite album that he worked on and why I like it so much. It's really kind of a compilation of singles. It's called Bird and Diz. So obviously, Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and them collaborating on this album. And gosh, where do I begin in terms of describing the artwork? It's three colors, or I guess maybe like three and a half colors. It's black, red, blue, and then the background is sort of this ink wash kind of gray that may or may not be a tint of the black. I am looking at an image online. I don't have it physically in front of me. I wish I did, though. And it's tight, but it's loose at the same time. And I love how the saxophone and the trumpet are both these amazing instruments that one is actually, the sax is a bird, in this case, it's perched on the edge. And there's one figure, it's a central figure. And I love how the trumpet divides the face vertically. So half is obviously Charlie Parker, half is obviously Dizzy Gillespie. And it's just so great because it's sort of loose, but it's also sort of, I don't know, cubist a little bit.
And the trumpet is, which is dividing the face, is pointing to the title at the top. So that brings your attention there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the hand lettering in this is not to be missed. I love that there's certainly some set type running down the right-hand side that gives a credit to the producer for the album, Norman Granz, who we mentioned earlier, the producer, longtime patron. But I just love the hand-done lettering on this, these shapes, because it's echoing, of course, the shapes of the musical instruments. And it's really fun and funky and bouncing. And even the label. So this was an album done for Mercury. And if you look in the lower left, it's a really fun, funky, like the letters just almost seem like they're alive, like they're dancing. Or I could see some of the serifs starting to like bellow and move and start to pump out little blurts of sound themselves, especially the Y. It seems like it's its own sort of musical instrument. I mean, this is such a fun piece of art for me.
So can I talk for a minute about some that I really like? Because I'm looking at David Stone Martin's illustration while you were describing that. And there's a couple that I'm really digging. For a lot of the same reasons, but I think it's clear that Dizzy Gillespie was really exciting this guy a lot, because two of his other records for Dizzy Gillespie Sextet and one called Roy and Diz are really both hot. Both use two color, black and red, and we'll post them so everyone can see.
Yeah,
but I'm particularly drawn to the Roy and Diz one. It's mostly black line artwork and then a few spots of red. And I can't help but allude to Spy versus Spy on this album cover. And, you know, I have to bring it to the low brow when you're doing the high brow. This is a brilliant, like, it just, this crazy intersection of all these lines. And it reminds me of Spy versus Spy. And it's beautiful.
Well, I don't think that's a coincidence. You know, Mad was in New York. This guy was working in New York. Certainly, Mad may be considered lowbrow by some, but you and I both know that these guys were actually very smart and very cultured.
Absolutely.
As much as they pretended not to be. And so I imagine that this artwork did not escape their glance. Even if it was only indirect, I'm sure it inspired what they were up to.
All right, so I'm so glad you brought David Stone Martin to the bar, Elliot. This guy, he's a real deal. He's got like the look of mid-century. If you were doing a course on teaching mid-century illustration and how crazy you can get with a crow quill pen, this is the guy that you would want there. I mean, he's just bringing it, right? He's just bringing it, and he's having a great time. I bet he spent a little bit of time around the bar, too.
Oh, I hope so. He, yes, Todd, he can always be an honorary guest, I think, at our bar, for sure.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Check out some of our other episodes. Check out the episode notes, and we'll see you around here next time at the bar.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And I'm Joe.
And we're the Professional Book Nerds. Two Mondays a month, we interview authors and talk about their upcoming books, what drives them, and their go-to order at the cafe.
On Thursdays, we share recommendations and dive into topics readers face, like, how do I actually read the books on my to-be-read list?
You can find the Professional Book Nerds podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn more about us? Our website is professionalbooknerds.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds.
We hope you'll come and listen, and as always, happy reading!
Two Designers Walk Into a Bar is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network.
For more information about our show, or to discover more podcasts you'll enjoy, visit evergreenpodcasts.com.